and welcome to Fidelity Connects, the Fidelity Investments Canada's podcast, connecting you to the world of investing and helping you stay ahead. In this episode, portfolio manager Aisha Akbar shares her global asset allocation outlook for 2021, from growth to value or cyclicals, from the U.S. into emerging markets. Aisha gives her take on the state of the markets. She says this has been a fascinating time, the most compressed economic cycle she can remember, and she says right now we're in a bit of a consolidation stage of the markets. For her fund in particular, she looks at it from a global standpoint, investing in global equities, global bonds, and cash. She is looking at regional allocations and doing sector allocation within the fund as well. She also touches upon inflation, the US dollar, and the rollout of the vaccine and what opportunities she's seeing there. This podcast was recorded on March 19th, 2021. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of Fidelity Investments Canada, ULC, or its affiliates. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment, tax, or legal advice. It is not an offer to sell or buy, or an endorsement, recommendation, or sponsorship of any entity or security cited. Read a fund's prospectus before investing. Funds are not guaranteed. Their values change frequently, and past performance may not be repeated. Fees, expenses, and commissions are all associated with fund investments.
I wonder if you can situate us first, Aisha, sort of where the fund, in terms of asset allocation, fits. We hear about asset allocation and some of the funds associated with that, with Canada, with the US, out of the UK. Can you kind of paint the picture for us where this all fits?
Sure. So the fund we're talking about today really is a truly global asset allocation fund, which means I'm looking at it from a global perspective, investing in global equities, global bonds, and cash. So what we're trying to do is use the sort of entire range of our tools that we have to bring to this portfolio. So we're looking at making the risk-off, risk-on decision. We're looking at using our expertise in choosing regional allocations, and we're also doing sector allocations within this as well. And we sort of give those allocations to managers at Fidelity. So there is active selection going on that side as well. So it's active management on the tactical asset allocation side. It's active investment in the sector and regional allocations, and it is also active stock selection. So really trying to bring bear all of the Fidelity investment tools to this product.
It's interesting, this moment in time. There's so many things that have gone on in the last year. And, you know, from what I can tell, so many things have changed. How are you looking at the markets right now, sort of digesting what we've seen, but clearly where we're going?
Sure. It has been an absolutely fascinating time in markets. So if you look over the last year, we've had the most compressed in economic cycle I can remember for a very, very long time. We've effectively gone from a recession. We've had the early recovery phase. The beginning of this year, we almost entered the exuberance stage of markets. And it does look right now that we seem to be in a bit of a consolidation stage in markets. There's an awful lot going on, and I think markets are trying to figure out which direction we go in from here. So if you think about, you know, what's happened, thankfully we it does appear that mostly we are getting to the end game of COVID. Vaccinations have given an awful lot of hope, certainly to markets, that, you know, we could be coming to the end of this. But what has been really interesting is that vaccination program and the hope that it brings of the end of lockdowns and the resumption of economic activity has coincided with a lot of fiscal stimulus, especially in the US. We've seen the passage of the $1.9 trillion program and the promise of more to come in terms of infrastructure. So you have this wonderful combination of economic reopening plus fiscal stimulus, and that is leading to a lot of interest in markets of whether, you know, growth, while it's usually a good thing, might be too much of a good thing, and whether it will result in inflation and rates rising. But this isn't the case everywhere in the world. That stimulus has been quite different, and it's been really interesting to see what's been happening in other parts of the world in terms of both stimulus and in terms of vaccination programs. And I think that is going to determine a lot of what happens in the year ahead.
So let's talk a little bit about, there was certainly a version of consensus sort of 3 months ago, just towards the end of last year, that the US dollar was on a downward trajectory that had the implications that you would expect for emerging market options and for, meaning equities, opportunities. What has shifted there? What has changed there? Have things been upended, or how do you look at that?
So the idea sort of towards the end of last year was very much that growth was going to come back. The US dollar was going to go down, and that would be good for other parts of the world. I think what has really changed those expectations is the stimulus that we're expecting to come through. And that has meant that people expect a little bit more inflation to come through. They're expecting rates to rise, as we've seen. And that has implications for the dollar, because all of a sudden the dollar becomes quite an attractive asset to hold. And that has a lot of implications, especially for emerging markets. Historically, a weak dollar has been great for emerging markets, a strong dollar less so. So there is, but it's not the only factor that affects emerging markets. But so there is a push and pull factor here. So people are worried about the dollar rising too much, which means emerging markets don't do very well. But on the other hand, the U.S. doing well, especially through the stimulus, means that global growth is probably going to be quite strong. And historically, that has been a pretty good environment for emerging markets. So we've got a few factors at play. And sort of getting, understanding which one of those will win out is going to be quite important in those things. Our base case for the U.S. dollar is that there potentially could be a little bit of upside, but we're not expecting a very, very sharply, strongly rising dollar. And even in that environment, that should be a stable, slightly rising U.S. dollar environment is not necessarily a bad one for emerging markets, because it probably means that growth remains pretty good, and that has historically been meant emerging markets have been a good place to be.
The discussion of inflation, of course, is everywhere, and I want to ask you your thoughts and how you ready your portfolio for that. What levers you pull to sort of make sure either that you're protected against it or that you're taking part in it. How do you look at inflation? Where are sort of the pitfalls and the areas to join in?
Yeah, it's a very, very good question. It's definitely the one that you want to get right this year. So the inflation question really is one of, the demand and supply. So the expectation is that demand is going to be very, very strong. And therefore, we are potentially going to get inflation, especially in the US. To some extent, that is going to happen simply from base effects. So if you recall what's happened to, let's just say, energy prices over the course of last year, that's almost doubled. So that is going to have an impact on inflation. I guess the question really is that going to be a temporary phenomenon, or is that going to persist? Now, the actions of the Fed would suggest that they think it's probably going to be a relatively temporary phenomenon. Clearly, they are not too worried about it right now. Markets are taking a little bit more of a less optimistic view on that, and that's why we've seen yields start to rise. I think our view is that there is potentially going to be inflation, and that's historically it would have resulted in rates rising, but that doesn't seem to be the case just yet. So the yields rising, a little bit of inflation expectations rising, I still think is there, but I don't think that's a phenomenon that's going to continue, because I do think that the Fed in particular will react to inflation if it gets out of hand. But it is a very, very tricky tightrope that they've set themselves. So monitoring that and making sure that this doesn't become a policy mistake, I think, is going to be very, very key to watch. And it's part of that reason that we really think that actually being a little bit more into risky assets and away from fixed income probably is the correct place to be. You probably don't want to be holding too much sovereign debt at the moment. You want a little bit more in terms of high yield, something that's a little bit more cyclical, but plain debt doesn't look all that great at the moment.
Interesting. When we talk about inflation, obviously that's sort of a US story, and it has a lot of stimulus money coming. It's also a Canadian story and other governments around. But there are other parts of the world that have really held back and sort of flooding their markets, either because they can't or because they have decided against it. Talk about inflation around the world. Obviously, there's some knock-on effects, but there are going to be areas of the world that aren't in the same position. Are they more attractive to you because of that?
I think the inflation argument, I think most places will probably see some rise in inflation. You know, the nice thing about, say, emerging markets last year was that you didn't see too much inflation, partly because food prices really didn't go anywhere. And that's a very big component of a lot of the basket of prices in those countries. That has changed as well. So there will be a little bit of a knock-on effect. But the question really is, which markets do well in that sort of environment? And then I think there's a few areas that do well. Emerging markets generally tend to do quite well in that environment, provided it doesn't get too out of hand. US small cap also does very well in that environment. It's probably one of the few things that almost always does well when inflation is rising. And clearly commodities is the big beneficiary. So that has been an area where we can play it that we have been adding to. Energy still remains one of our preferred areas to invest in on a sector basis, partly because we see the demand coming through, partly because there are factors within the sector that make it a very attractive thing. So I think trying to inflation-proof our portfolios by being risk-on and being in the more inflation-sensitive sectors is the way to go.
So when you look at the rotation, so-called rotation from growth to value, does value kind of mean cyclical to you? Does it mean commodities, for instance? What else?
Yeah, it's a very, very good question. So, I mean, in the traditional way of looking at growth and value as the indices describe it, what you're seeing is that there's a very strong correlation between how real yields go and which one does well. So, you know, until quite recently, we had yields basically going down all the time. And that was a fantastic environment for growth assets, which tend to be long duration. Clearly, that has changed. So it isn't a surprise that the value has done well. But I think the value growth thing is a lot more nuanced. You know, you can have, I think that the way we would like to think about it is that you have to find the value names even within the sort of traditional growth industries. So, you know, tech is probably one that comes to mind when most people think of growth. Yes, it is going to be hit when yields go up, but even within that, there are going to be you know, companies and stocks that you can play that will do well. But clearly, sort of, you know, at the surface, things like energy, things like financials should benefit in this environment. But I think the question really that you want to ask is, how long is this going to persist? So is this going to be a situation like 2016, where you had a very nice rally in value, but it kind of went back to sort of, you know, the growth phenomenon? Or is this going to be something that persists for a lot longer? And I think the central banks might have quite a lot to say in that, in terms of how far they're willing to let yields rise.
Fascinating. It's so fascinating right now watching all of these areas. You know, I want to come back to tech actually in a minute. We'll discuss a bit more about that. But I want to just kind of get your thoughts on regions and actually specific countries around the world where either you see sort of the political environment being better, but really the investment thesis making a lot of sense right now. Are there, we've spoken about India in the past and obviously China. Tell us a bit about areas that are maybe even LATAM that you see opportunities sort of now.
Yeah, so you mentioned EM, so let's start off with
yeah.
That. Given the environment that we've talked about, especially when the US potentially could do very, very well, that is an environment that actually suits sort of emerging markets ex-Asia very well. So LATAM should be a beneficiary. Mexico is a market that we are particularly interested in. Potentially it could bounce bounce back very, very strongly, partly because of idiosyncratic factors happening, but also because of its proximity to the US and the fact that when the US does well, Mexico tends to do quite well as well. So that is definitely an area that we'd like to be interested in. Emerging markets, obviously, quite a lot depends on what happens in China. But LATAM a little bit more geared towards the US, so that potentially that could be a very interesting place to be, especially given that it hasn't had a great time of it in the last year or so. Another area that we actually think might be very interesting, and I'm really happy to be able to say this sitting here in London, is the UK. So that is an area that we do think could potentially do quite well. We've had a pretty tough time of it here. Obviously, Brexit has been in the news, but that does seem to be in the rearview mirror. COVID wasn't a success initially, but the vaccine rollout has meant that it does look like the UK will be opening up quite soon. And I can assure you that I am very much looking forward to going out and spending some time on the service as soon as
I wish able. That for you as well. I know, I wish that for everyone. That's good. I mean, as you say, the UK has had a slate of bad news, but it's sort of moving beyond that to an extent, and Canada is like this as well. There's sort of a resource commodity, so-called value bent a bit to some of the UK stocks. Is that fair? Is that also part of the discussion?
Absolutely. I was just going to mention that. So I think
you
have summarized it incredibly well, but yeah, absolutely. And I think it is absolutely no coincidence that these are all the value-oriented parts of the market. The ones that should benefit from a cyclical recovery. And those are the areas that we are currently focused on. So yes, there will be volatility in markets, but we think it's probably worth getting into these, and potentially they could be having quite a good run for the rest of the year.
Aisha, what about India? Much obviously has been discussed about Chinese equities as a huge part of the EM discussion and basket, generally speaking. But India also has the potential to be, I don't know, as large, but massive. Do you like looking at various opportunities in India?
Yes, India's been another really interesting one. And if you go back to sort of this time last year, there was a massive, very strict lockdown in India to try and deal with the COVID crisis. And it's probably fair to say that economically that was, it really hurt. But it does seem like COVID there is under control. The vaccination program is ramping up incredibly fast. They are, vaccinating sort of a million plus people, every day. It is really picking up. The other really interesting thing, and I think this really ties into what we were talking about how things are being different in different parts of the world, is that the response, the government response, has been quite different in different parts of the world. So in the US, in a lot of the, in Europe, it does seem to be about fiscal stimulus. It seems to be about spending. But in places like India, it's still about reform. So there's still an element of sticking to the orthodoxy, trying to improve productivity and trying to improve the output that you can get, not necessarily just about providing money for people to spend. And that is a very, very promising story longer term. So, there's a real sort of real-time economic experiment going on in the world with different parts of, different countries adopting very different approaches. And I think that will be a very interesting one to watch. But yes, India, the economy should rebound. It is opening up more or less, and if the reforms can be implemented, then India potentially could be a very, very good story.
As we mentioned in the introduction, a good chunk of the portfolio is either fixed income or cash. When you look at a country like India that obviously has borrowed less in this moment, a lot of less at least relative to Europe and North America and so on, what does that mean for sort of the fixed income side, EM bonds basically?
EM bonds, or if you want to be even more precise, China bonds. A very, very interesting thing. So I think one of the things that all investors, especially portfolio managers like me, who manage balanced portfolios, is what is the hedge? What is the hedge to equities? If we don't think bonds are necessarily going to be the best place to be, what do we invest in? And If you look at the correlations, you know, the correlations to EM bonds and China bonds in particular is pretty good. So they do provide that hedge. So there may be a situation where we are gradually moving away from sort of global bonds to probably finding, individual ideas, a bit more idiosyncratic ideas within the fixed income space where they still represent good value and do provide some return as well and a hedge to risk assets.
Do cryptocurrencies provide a hedge to risk assets, or are they risk assets? But I'm curious what you think.
Yeah, that is the question, Pamela. So it's a very interesting one. I think you know, if you'd asked me this question last year, I would have said, oh, I don't, you know, no, I'm not entirely sure. But I think increasingly it is becoming very clear that Bitcoin is going to be quite important. Where it fits into portfolios is actually a very, 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 very good question. So I think they potentially could be a hedge. They do behave differently. They potentially could be in the sort of, you know, if you divide assets into sort of risky assets or hedging assets, I think they do sit in the hedging portfolio. The problem is, so far, they have been very volatile. You get it at the right time, it's fantastic. If you don't, you know, it's not exactly doing the job that you have to. But I think that situation is evolving. So it is something that we will have to watch quite carefully. But there is another thing that we probably should mention when it comes to Bitcoin. And that is the ESG angle. Increasingly, this is something that is very important, and it's certainly something that we take into account when we're making our decisions. And from an ESG perspective, Bitcoin's not exactly, the cleanest thing out there. Anecdotally, you get told that the amount of energy it takes to produce Bitcoin, it's about the same as how much energy Denmark consumes, or a relatively big country like Pakistan consumes. So there are some considerations that we will have to make. So I think Bitcoin, understanding Bitcoin, is going to be increasingly important. It's not made its way into our portfolios yet, but there's an awful lot of work going on to make sure that we're not going to miss an opportunity to provide some, you know, either return or risk mitigation for our clients by overlooking it.
As a Cub reporter many years ago, I got to go to a gold mine in Northern Ontario and watch the amount of work and the number of people and the energy to get one little brick of gold. And it was sort of astonishing to me, you know, all these levels and organization. Gold obviously takes some energy, it takes some human power, it takes some organization. I don't know if you compare the two. Where does gold fit on that side for you? It's actually had a bit of a rough go in the last few months.
Yeah, I mean, it has. So, I mean, gold has traditionally been a hedging portfolio, and I guess, yes, you're right, it does have a lot of similar issues to the ones we've described with Bitcoin. Gold hasn't, I mean, it was a part of our portfolios last year. It had a fantastic run. It's a lot lower percentage in portfolios than it was before. And again, it comes down to that yield thing. So if real yields have been going down, the opportunity cost of holding gold is very low. And therefore, it did make sense that increases. As those yields go up, then there's other things that become a little bit more attractive, and especially since those things also pay out in income, which gold doesn't. It's not a great inflation hedge either. So I think, you know, that's something to take into account as well.
Lots of questions rolling in here, a number of which you've been answering along the way. So actually, we sort of hit them. But a comment, and perhaps this fits with sort of the 40 side or however you allocate things. Please comment, could you, Aisha, on REITs? Anything to avoid? Some thoughts on real estate generally as an investment?
Yeah, so real estate, again, if you think of it as a yield play, I think that kind of helps determine what is going to happen. Again, I think here this could be an interesting one to look at in terms of, the trends we're going to see post COVID. Are we going to need as much retail space, for example? Are we going to use offices in the same way? And again, I think you have to be quite nuanced. So it's very interesting. So one of the things, for example, that we've been able to do, and we can do this because we are a global portfolio, is look at REITs around the world. So Asia, Singapore, for example, sounds like a great place to be, because actually within COVID as well, They had it very much under control. They really couldn't go out anywhere else. So what do people do? They went to the malls. So they've had a fantastic time in terms of looking at things. But I think yields, again, REITs as a whole are probably quite difficult at the moment, but there are opportunities within that that you can really make some very, very good money. But, you know, taking an active approach to sectors and especially things like REITs, I think is going to be quite important.
Let's dig into the pieces of ESG that are very valuable for you to look at and the pieces that, I mean, you do very deep dives on how you're going to invest. ESG, I know, is a part, but it's not sort of just a broad category. How do you look at incorporating, to what extent, and what is, I don't want to say a red herring, but a red herring?
I think the issue with ESG is that there's very many ways of doing it, and people tend to have their own views on what it is and what it isn't. Certainly there are indices that will give you ratings, and you have companies that have very, very high ESG ratings versus some that don't. But as with everything, nuance is key. One of the reasons, and I think we were going to touch on this, why tech has done so well is because it's a key factor. That there is a ESG has sort of moved flows towards things with perhaps more intangible assets, and tech is clearly a beneficiary of that. But tech doesn't necessarily tick all the boxes when it comes to ESG. Certainly some companies aren't so great, and some clearly are. But you want to be a lot more nuanced about it. You want to make sure that companies are paying taxes. You want to make sure that companies are actually employing people. That seems to be quite important. And not all tech companies are fall into that category. So what we're trying to do is really focus on engaging with companies, making sure that they're going to make a difference going forward. We don't really want to rule out anyone just because it doesn't screen very well. We think that kind of hides a lot of things underneath a very simple rating. So it is very much building on what we've done all the time, which is to really do our research, understand what is going on, and engaging with companies and management to make sure they continue to do the right thing. And that works for the managers that we invest in as well. The research team rate managers as well, and ESG ratings on them is incredibly important too.
There's a lot going on in the world. You've outlined a huge portion of it. Geopolitics is another layer, obviously, that I think people are watching. We don't have a lot of time left because we've had so many great conversations. But I mean, I guess this just all speaks to, is it somewhat expected volatility through the rest of this year? I mean, how do you manage that? How is it that you're able to deal with the volatility that seems to be in the market and perhaps expected?
By being active. That is a quick answer. I mean, I think this is not going to be an easy trending market to deal with. There is so much going on. We've talked about the markets, we talked about yields, and geopolitics certainly comes into that. And watching those things is going to be very important. So I think that the key here is to be nimble. And really, be ahead of the curve in terms of setting out your scenarios and being able to react to them. I think if you are only reacting to what is going on in markets, you're probably going to miss out. So it's going to be challenging, but at the same time, if you're an active investor, it is going to be something that really pays off. It's not been a great environment for active investors for a long time. And it does seem to me that we are on the cusp of that changing. We've gone from market leadership, which is incredibly narrow, to a rotation, to a broadening out, to individual companies and different countries behaving in different manners. So I think the way to deal with all of that is to be nimble and to be ready to change your asset allocation at fairly short notice.
Aisha Akbar, it's great to see you again. Thank you for spending time with us today and this evening for you. Have a great weekend.
Thanks for listening to the Fidelity Connects podcast. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to Fidelity Connects on your podcast platform of choice. And if you like what you're hearing, leave a review or a 5-star rating. You can visit fidelity.ca for more information on future live webcasts. And don't forget to follow Fidelity Canada on Twitter. Thanks again, and see you next time.